Hello, I'm Kate Chauviret, and welcome to the SetUp Leadership and Safety Podcast, Driving Sustainable Safety Performance. Based in France and operating internationally, SetUp is a global executive education club where minds meet, grow, and succeed together. We are a collaborative learning community of leading international organizations from diverse and non-competitive industries. Rooted in the real world and driven by the real-life challenges of our community, we co-create leadership development programs with innovative, highly relevant, and actionable learning. For over a decade, we have worked with our members to develop and strengthen the leadership elements required for a strong and sustainable safety culture. As organizations struggle to compete in a more complex and fast-paced world, forward-thinking leaders agree that the greatest impact on overall performance is achieved by caring for their people. Leaders who invest in safety programs and develop a culture of care inspire greater motivation, create happy and engaged teams, and boost productivity. So what could be more important than taking care of the most valuable asset in your business, the people who work in it? We hope this safety podcast will help move the needle yet a bit closer to getting to zero. This is the third episode in a series of five podcasts with Xavier Bontemps, international HSE leader with over 35 years energy industry leadership experience gained from senior roles at BP, Ineos and Total, and most recently as Total Energy's corporate HSE director. In this podcast series, we'll explore how leaders can drive sustainable safety performance to help protect lives, assets and the environment. Xavier will share his insightful real-life experiences, safety challenges and best practice solutions. So in this third episode, we'll explore how do you know if your HSE professionals are performing well. Welcome once again to the SetUp podcast, Xavier. Today we'll be exploring how safety leaders can tell if their HSE professionals are doing a good job. So where do we begin?
Good morning, Kate. Let's start by understanding safety performance before zooming in on HSE professionals. There cannot be performance without measurement. Leading and lagging KPIs allow us to pilot action plans. But that's only the tip of the iceberg and is far from being sufficient. A sustainable performance is obtained when management practices a number of performance levers and establishes a strong safety culture. I can relate to at least six management practices. Leadership or felt leadership, that's the first. I would often say a leader inspires, a manager holds accountable. There are many verbs and practices that translate inspiration and engagement that I will illustrate. A second is the performance monitoring. I refer to the DMIN cycle very often, the plan, do, check, and act of work processes. A third are HSE competencies, and we'll come to that. Professionals that know the rules and standards that require soft skills, and we'll get to that. A fourth would be investigation analysis, a practice of investigating, going into the human and organizational factors of an accident, which is going to the heart of real prevention. A fifth revolves around recognition and sanctions. As a rule of thumb, a sanction is more readily accepted by staff when preceded by at least five recognitions. But sanctions are required as an indication of strong stakes in the ground in the eyes of all. A last is communication, but non-conventional communication, which is more appropriate in terms of captivating attention, because traditional methods do not sway crowds. Now, these type of levers require competent HSE professionals.
So yeah, what about the HSE professionals themselves? What competencies do they need to demonstrate or develop early on in their careers?
Well, Kate, if you start by reflecting that rules, regulation, and standards prevent accidents, then you say, well, these encompass many past events. They can become numerous. They can seem overwhelming. So the first role of an HSE manager is not only to know these rules and regulations, but to select, translate, and deploy those who will directly impact their business. He or she will equally ensure that they are embodied in the company's management system so that the DMIN cycle, the plan, do, check, and act, allows management to steer its business through the coordination of internal work processes. Without forgetting that training with concrete illustrations of base rules is required, takes time, is repeated, and should ideally be conducted by the local team leader. A second trait or competency is that these HSE professionals, of which I've been one of them, must mirror risk and hazards of all aspects of health, safety, and the environment in a transparent way. This requires operational experience, the courage to speak up, the accuracy of being factual, but equally tactful by using perspective. Internal, external audits are common tools and should be concerned as learning opportunities. They enable HSC pay setting, but very often audits are perceived by management as a pile of additional work and a risk of loss of reputation. So after knowledge of rules, after becoming courageous mirrors, a third trait, a third competency, last but not least, is that HSC managers need to groom safety leadership. They should be coaches to management. They need to inspire and coordinate how a safety culture can be embedded. And to do so, managers should be part of the local management executive team. They should have sufficient experience and seniority in comparison to their bosses.
What happens when HSC managers don't fit the bill?
Kate, let me share with you a personal story that illustrates what can go wrong. When I was a refinery manager of a Dutch plant, my HSC department kept me in the dark with regards to repeated community complaints due to strong hydrocarbon odors. Tank venting, wastewater treatment of various crudes containing high levels of mercaptans were impacting downwind the community for many years. The head of environment in this department relished the privilege of interfacing directly with the controlling authorities of the Dutch Ministry of Environmental Affairs. He was competent, but minimized the issues. He did not surface the proper regulatory risk to the plant, and it reached a climax when I received a written prosecution letter from the ministry following a peak of 100 complaints. And this letter indicated that any additional proven complaint would be fined 1 million euros each. And after 10, there would be a formal procedure ordering the closure of my refinery. And that's because the refinery did not have a deeming circle of tracking the origin and closure of odor complaints. And the mirror of flagging threats to the refinery license to operate was totally distorted. So as a matter of urgency, I assembled all plant staff in full transparency. I explained the project plan, which was kicked off right away. And as a result, I recruited an external HSC leader. I demoted the head of environment and started physically covering the wastewater treatment unit as a start.
So why is safety leadership so essential to safety performance?
I believe safety leadership helps companies navigate through big reorganizations, through catastrophes, through pandemics like COVID, and equally through major investments, mergers, acquisitions, spin-offs. Because safety leadership is equally human leadership. Actually, some organizations combine HSC and HR under one lead. This has the advantage of having both HSC and HR teams share common topics of interest, such as on absenteeism, medical care, health care, mental well-being at work. I often say staff should go home safe and healthier than when they started their day. As a manager of a team, you know, I was taught to classify my subordinates using two features. The first is motivation. So I used M plus for somebody very motivated or M minus for somebody poorly motivated. I used a second feature, which is competency. C plus for very competent, C minus for poorly competent. I believe an efficient manager is a human leader that uses both. So for example, a highly competent and motivated team player, M plus C plus, does not need a lot of coaching from his manager. And he should have full delegation from his manager. A poorly motivated and incompetent team player, M-C-, does need close management and coaching. So safety leadership is about elevating the motivation and competency of all safety leaders, all staff. And ideally, each individual should become that safety leader. But it starts at the top. And so safety leadership training programs are an essential element in building a safety culture and developing a coherent community of practice. The success of these training programs requires a number of key factors, Kate. You know, I would think this type of training program is structured with various phases that corresponds to a final strategy. It's deployed through workshops with practical tools and motivational language. It's highly visible. It relies on the contribution of senior leaders using non-conventional tools in terms of communication that goes to the hearts and minds, using storytelling, role-playing, even actors and thematic movies. Finally, safety leadership training should build a pool of passionate HSC managers that grow their soft skills of mirroring and coaching. In my last position, I personally designed and led the training of group leaders with the belief that this was the most effective use of my time as HSC Senior Vice President of a major oil, gas, and renewables company. This is because each group leader could then inspire and manage in a coherent way by understanding the impact of selected rituals.
And how does safety culture emerge from this type of training?
The best definition of a safety culture I have used is the way we do things here, when no one's looking. So how do we do things in a common way? I like the Chinese proverb that says, I hear and I forget, I see and I remember, but I do and I understand. It is by collective practicing and doing that we do things that stick. And a strong culture is when everyone chips in and does it. Everyone, all the time. Think, Kate, about a football team which trains physics and tactics for months. But if one player stops for a fortnight, he will need, and that team will need months to recover as that team is weakened. So I define a strong culture because it is resilient, broad, and profound. Resilient because it transcends specific individuals and job rotations of leaders and managers. It is broad because it encompasses, it covers, it impacts all stakeholders, contractors, customers, local authorities, visitors, work representatives. And it is profound because it spans from the company head to the last floor cleaner. So a good training program explains the company's safety ambition, it explains performance, it illustrates human leaderships, and puts in light the impactful rituals that create a coherent safety culture.
So what are the practical things that every individual and safety leader in a company should be doing to collectively embed a safety culture?
Kate, I have from my experience a very long list of things and practices that work. But let me clearly pick out a half dozen. And they're fascinating because they are open to management's insights and imagination in the way they are conducted to maximize impact. For example, housekeeping can be very impactful. If the plant manager does this in front of everyone he's walking around, or when a plant-wide simultaneous cleaning operation is organized with 100.0% of staff spending a few hours sorting out the workplace, or more profoundly, when the 5S lean methodology is used, the 5S standing for sort, set in order, shine, standardize, sustain. A second example is clearly around safety moments that can have a lasting effect when they are personal, short, visible, with easy takeaways. And Kate, no one cannot share his or her personal story, so it's very collective. Another example clearly is with toolboxes, where topics can help colleagues because they're close to their preoccupation. For example, following an accident that colleagues will have noted. Ideally taking turns in a team to engage on a topic of choice, which underlines coherence. I have a passion equally on a fourth example, safety inductions of new staff and contractors. These are key moments. They are the equivalent of the first minute of a one-hour interview. That initial messaging is paramount and best achieved by leadership presence. The message can go straight to the heart with messages on base rules and consequences, but when they are best illustrated with workers present, illustrating their own accidents and near misses. Another case is communicating measurement and compliance of life-saving rules, golden rules, as mentioned in the second podcast. This allows productive team discussions on the difficulties of compliance on specifics. There's a huge difference between handing over the usual brochure of rules and engaging in discussion of why a given rule saves lives. And finally, safety tours and an opportunity to listen versus command. Putting a finger on a new risk to workers and agreeing how to best accommodate will give a new meaning to safety. Workers want to discuss when there is a genuine interest in their own work and habits. And as you see, these practices are difficult to measure with simple KPIs, but have much more to do with soft skills that translate into leadership.
And does an HSE organization equally play a role in safety leadership and culture?
Absolutely. I've worked with different types of organization in my career, but a strong central organization is essential to translate HSE policy into impactful and meaningful action. My last company pooled all branch and business HSE talent and management under one functional organization, which I had the chance of leading for 3 years. This enabled continuous benchmarking of best practice. It increased tenfold staff motivation because staff could work across the whole company. Think about 130 countries. It helped to consolidate a unique company culture. It was a powerful, strong symbol. It was called One HSE, and it was performing in a similar ways to the central purchasing organization many companies can have. And its structure had a lot of clarity. The rules department simplified rules. The auditing department ensured that barriers of prevention were robust. The process safety department had expertise in designing quality barriers. And even the emergency response department was exercising readiness when the worst arrives.
So how can we conclude our conversation today?
So in conclusion, sustainable safety performance is a product of safety leadership and culture. It is not measured by the reduction or absence of accidents, but by the quality of a multitude of collective and impactful practices and rituals. And HSC managers play three fundamental roles as specialists, mirrors, and coaches. They assist leadership in the design and deployment of coherent programs that include safety leadership training. HSC professionals will be more effective in a centralized organization which articulates the key purposes of HSC effectiveness. Again, explicit simplified rules, insightful audits and investigation, process safety preventive barrier building, and emergency readiness. But HSC roles, here again, are evolving in a world craving for renewable energies. But that, Kate, is the topic of yet another podcast.
Thank you so much, Xavier. This is the end of today's episode, and we look forward to our next podcast where we will be discussing just that. How do you tackle HSC in a world bracing for renewables and environmental and societal governance? Xavier Bontemps is an international HSC leader and safety professional with over 35 years energy industry leadership experience gained from senior roles at BP, INEOS and Total, and most recently as Total Energy's corporate HSC director for over 3 years. The leadership themes discussed in this podcast are explored in detail during SEDEP's flagship Leadership and Safety Culture Programme Levels 1 and 2, co-created by L'Oréal and Sanofi, and in SEDEP's Safety Leadership Academy programme, jointly created with SPE for the oil and gas industry and endorsed by the IOGP. These inspiring learning journeys are designed to help participants rise to the many challenges involved in creating a healthier, more engaged and effective workforce, and examine how our pandemic world has changed workplace health and safety expectations and needs. Our programmes enable H&S leaders from all industries and sectors to rethink their roles and develop the skills and tools necessary to embrace our new world. Our Safety Leadership Academy is specifically focused on developing leadership capabilities within the oil and gas industry to shift paradigms and make zero accidents a reality. You can find out more about these programmes on our website at www.sedep.fr. Thanks again, Xavier, and until next time.